Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And if you've been listening recently, you'll know that I've been examining in depth the foreign policy of Harry Truman in the immediate aftermath of the Second World War. And today we're going to look at the Truman Doctrine, Truman's first major policy statement about America's approach to dealing with the threat of communism. So, how does the Truman policy come up? The Truman Doctrine, I beg your pardon, come about? Well, as you know, or as you will know if you've been tuning into the last few podcasts, by 1946-47, Truman was still at a point of major indecision about what America's stance towards communism would be. Truman was a relatively inexperienced foreign policy president, and he lacked an awful lot of the wartime diplomacy experience that Roosevelt had had. So his initial instinct was to be more belligerent towards the Soviet Union. But on top of that, he was well aware that he needed to avoid direct military confrontation, not because of the costs of war that would be involved. Soviet Union don't get their own nuclear weapon until 1949. Really because of a reluctance on the part of the American population at large, and certainly on the part of both houses of Congress, in order to commit militarily long-term to the defence of other countries. There was a similar wave of isolationist sentiment emerging in America as had emerged at the end of the First World War. So here again, we're looking at Grand Expectations by James Patterson. And it's a problem that emerges in America's nearest ally, Great Britain, that forces Truman's hand. Patterson writes, "It happens often in history that nations take bold moves only when external events force their hand. That happened to Truman in 1947. When Great Britain sent word that it no longer had the resources to maintain political stability in Greece and Turkey, areas that the British had until then considered parts of their sphere of interest. The spectre of rising communist influence, if not control, of the Eastern Mediterranean suddenly loomed before American officials. Worst-case scenarios included the downfall of the pro-Western monarchy in Greece, then embroiled in a civil war against the communist insurgents, renewed Soviet pressure on Turkey, a key buffer for Greece, and the gateway to the Middle East, and even perhaps Soviet domination of Iran and the oil-rich nations surrounding it. At that time, Western Europe, struggling to recover from World War II, obtained 75% of its oil from the area." So, a threat to Greece and Turkey was an enormous problem. Winston Churchill had, in the percentages agreement with Stalin, agreed that the British would have a major influence in Greece. Stalin was largely obliging with this, knowing that in return Churchill was willing to guarantee him a virtually free hand in Eastern Europe. the percentages agreement was viewed by Stalin as a nonsense, as it had the British and the Americans having percentages of interest in countries like Hungary and Poland and Czechoslovakia, where their percentage in reality was going to be zero. So Stalin saw Greece as a kind of a minor offering to give to Churchill to placate him, but he really viewed the whole process as an absurdity, which indeed it was. It was Churchill's way, really, of attempting to, at the final stages of the war, attempting to continue projecting power. Britain was forced to withdraw from Greece in 1947 as a result of Britain's convertibility crisis, or its currency crisis. In 1945, John Maynard Keynes had gone to Washington with the hope of obtaining a loan from America, not just a loan, but a grant of money. The British believed that they were entitled to some sort of gift of money from America, considering the period of time during the war when Britain had fought on its own. Actually, to describe Britain as fighting on its own is a bit of a nonsense, really, because it had an entire empire behind it. And Britain also hoped to gain a loan, or managed to gain a loan at the same time, from Canada. The American US Treasury was reluctant to give a grant of money to Britain, and instead offered a loan, a much smaller loan than Keynes had been hoping for, and offered it on particular terms, that the pound became fully convertible by 1947. This meant that by 1947, all currency controls on the pound would be removed, so the pound could be bought and sold on the international money markets. This meant that the pound could be sold in large quantities if it was considered no longer worth particularly owning. So if you had an economy like America's that was expanding, an economy like Great Britain's that was shrinking, it would make sense for an individual to sell pounds and buy dollars, thus depressing the value of the pound and inflating the value of the dollar, and thus the size of the US economy. The US Treasury knew full well that this would be the effect, and it would really be the thing that would destroy the British Empire finally. And it would end what many American presidents had seen as an unfair advantage, the British being able to artificially inflate the value of their currency and capture markets, colonial markets, cheap raw materials, and populations who only had the option of buying British goods, and in doing so, giving British world power a stay of execution, keeping it alive for that bit longer. Well, the end of the Second World War was a deciding time for many things, and it was really a deciding time for British world power, which came to an end as a result of the war, and slowly ebbed away over the following two decades. The convertibility crisis that plunged Britain in 1947 into recession and into austerity forced the Labour government to extend rationing through to the end of the Labour government, and it finally ended in 1954. But peacetime rationing of certain produce and goods, such as bread, there were certain items that had never been rationed even during wartime that came to be rationed during this period of austerity. So that's the transition that Britain was facing. So the idea of spending hundreds of millions to keep British soldiers in places like Greece and Turkey and Palestine, though admittedly there was only a small contingent of military advisers in Turkey, but mainly Greece and Palestine, was asked the question. Truman said he later hugely regretted treating Britain in this way, mainly because of the problems that it then caused for America. If Britain was no longer able to fulfil this role in the east of the Mediterranean, then America would have to, otherwise risk handing the world's oil supplies to the Soviet Union. It was George Marshall and Dean Acheson who very quickly informed the president that there would be no choice but for America to fill Britain's role by sending aid to Greece and Turkey and military assistance if necessary. The administration was worried about Congress. A couple of months ago, I did a podcast on the loss of both houses to the Republicans in 1946, as there was a general shift towards the right and towards kind of radical anti-communism. The problem was that despite the fact that the Republicans were ardent anti-communists, they were also dominated by an ardent anti-interventionist spirit as well. Their anti-communism was more of the domestic policy variety. And decreasing commitments to Europe was the far more popular idea as far as the Republican Party was concerned. However, when Truman called a meeting between the administration and key congressional leaders, Dean Acheson made a very, very colourful picture which kind of prefigured the domino theory. He said, "Like apples in a barrel, infected by one rotten one, the corruption of Greece would infect Iran and all to the east. It would also carry infection to spread through Asia Minor and Egypt, and to Europe through Italy and France. The Soviet Union was playing one of the greatest gambles in history at minimum cost. We and we alone were in the position to break up this play." The Republican Arthur Vandenberg, who sat on the as head of the Foreign Relations Committee, was impressed and kind of shocked by what Acheson had to say. And he spoke directly and frankly to Truman. He said that the only way to get the funding that you want was to make a personal appearance before Congress and scare the hell out of the American people. And this is precisely what Truman did. So the effect that the Truman Doctrine had, as it was based in the practice of raising levels of anti-communist anxiety across the United States, is it was part of the beginnings of the anti-communist era, the anti-communist hysteria that would later grip the United States, because the global nature of what Truman saw as the communist threat was brought home and articulated in very frank terms to the American people. On March the 12th, Truman appeared before Congress and called for $400 million in military aid to Greece and Turkey. And he justified this by saying, "I believe that it must be the policy of the United States to support free peoples who are resisting attempted subjugation by armed minorities or by outside pressures. I believe that we must assist free people to work out their own destinies in their own way. I believe that our help should be primarily through economic and financial aid, which is essential to economic stability and orderly political process." Once Truman had finally got off the fence and made his decision and had stopped vacillating as he had done for the last 2 years, he was able to very swiftly embrace a far more proactively anti-communist stance.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And a far more proactively interventionist stance. But he was not without critics. Many in the Republican Party, as well as those on the pacifist left, who had followed the career of Henry Wallace in the Democrat Party, who was on the more dovish wing of the party, were alarmed at the cost. $400 million, which was 1% of the total federal budget at that time, which was $40 billion. And that was expected to grow as new requests for aid from Greece and Turkey emerged, and perhaps from other countries as well. There were some opponents who argued that America was breaking from the principles of the Monroe Doctrine, which meant that America stayed largely out of European affairs and Europe stayed out of American affairs, and that America was breaking with the faith of the Founding Fathers, who had overthrown the shackles of imperialism, and as America became more and more involved in external matters and involved in other countries, then they became more and more likely to act like an imperial power itself. And that America was now taking upon it the role that Great Britain had, and that there was a suspicion that Truman might be exaggerating or distorting the problems of Greece. There was a fear or an accusation that the actions of Truman were now bypassing the new United Nations. And the United Nations' role specifically was to deal with the threat of external aggression from other countries, as the Greeks were being aided at least by Yugoslavia, if not indirectly by Stalin as well. The Truman Doctrine seemed open-ended. It seemed an offer, a blank check, to any and every country in the world. There was a question as to whether Truman was going to protect the interests of all free people everywhere. Critics on the left of the party, or the left of the Democrats, wanted to know why America wanted to provide military aid, and why it should go necessarily to the monarchy of Greece and the dictatorship in Turkey. Both extremely unsavoury regimes in terms of their human rights records. Fiorello LaGuardia, who was the liberal former mayor of New York, said that it was not worth a single soldier to keep the Greek king on the throne. Henry Wallace also alleged that the aid that was being proposed would lead to a century of fear. Truman showed some of his more skillful political instincts here. He succeeded in seizing the middle ground between anti-interventionists, who were mainly on the right, and the likes of Wallace on the left. So he had managed to steer a course through the middle, and it was a course that was relatively, if not popular, then widely accepted. And Truman was able to appeal to the instinct, the cause of anti-communism amongst both parties, which triumphed over the instinct against interventionism. So anti-communism beats anti-interventionism. And since the end of the Second World War, the misgivings that so many in both parties had about the Soviet Union and about Roosevelt's judgment when it came to the Soviet Union bubbled over into a call for direct action and an end to prevarication and procrastination when it came to dealing with the advances of the Soviet Union into Eastern Europe, Southern Europe, and into the Middle East. Truman in 1946 had already embarked upon a policy of containment. If you look at a podcast I did, must be 8 weeks ago now, talking about American foreign policy at the crossroads. That's when he just threw his hat in the ring in terms of containment. But it's the Truman Doctrine that is the big public articulation of that policy and the big public commitment to that policy. The plan was voted through Congress, 67 to 23 in the Senate and 284 to 107 in the House. So it's a huge victory. And all of those congressmen and senators were looking at the electorates in their home states and trying to gauge whether they would have their jobs in 2 years' time. So there was always a kind of a political calculation. And the fact that so many throw their support behind Truman tends to suggest that doing something about communism in order to preserve this sort of notional American way of life was an idea that had widespread support across the USA. A version of the Truman Doctrine is embraced by Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon. In fact, all Cold War presidents of the 60s and 70s held the principle of containment to be sacrosanct. And the presidents like Kennedy and later on Reagan both believed in going one step further in that communism needed to be forced backwards. And of course, under Ronald Reagan, his single-minded commitment was that the Cold War must actually be won by the United States of America. Under Truman, his Secretary of State, George Marshall, perhaps provided the bigger contribution to American soft power in the post-war era in the guise of martial aid. Now, this is something that's worthy of a separate podcast all on its own. I don't want to take up much room talking about this, but I just want to kind of introduce the idea of the Marshall Plan. And in 1947, economic aid to Western Europe became, in the eyes of George Marshall, the one device that would actually preserve liberal democracy and liberal democratic capitalism in Europe for the foreseeable future. Marshall, when he visited Europe that year, became absolutely certain that unless there was American directed recovery of Europe, then a resurgent fascism or the threat of communism would sweep away democracies in piecemeal fashion. Marshall was convinced that within a generation America would be fighting another ground war in Europe unless something significant was done. Marshall was also certain that if economies across Europe could be resurrected through aid, then these economies would start to become clients of American goods and services and would become excellent marketplaces for American exports. So in the long run, it would make sense for America to do this. He said in 1947 that our policy is directed not against any country or doctrine, but against hunger, poverty, desperation and chaos. At this critical point in history, we of the United States are deeply conscious of our responsibilities to the world. We know that in this trying period, between a war that is over and a peace that is not yet secure, the destitute and oppressed of the earth look chiefly to us for sustenance and support until they can again face life with self-confidence and self-reliance. Across Eastern Europe, the communist authorities there quite deliberately restricted food, rationed and used hunger as a way of persuading reluctant populations to embrace them. And one of the purposes of martial aid was to present to European populations who had not really experienced the economic dynamism of and capitalist modernity of the United States, that allowing oneself to be within an American sphere of influence was a far more attractive option. There were humanitarian concerns behind the Marshall Plan, but it's worth noting, of course, that America, like all nation states, was operating off a considerable degree of self-interest when it came to the plan, and this was what would be ultimately part of its kind of guiding instincts in order to enable Congress to authorize such huge loans and aid to other countries. So by the end of 1947, Truman, who had now fully embraced interventionism, along with George Marshall, who had proposed and had enacted the Marshall Plan, had gone from a position of relative indecision on Cold War policy to one of outright and radical leadership. And as a result of this, the diminished position of Great Britain was further cemented. And as 1947 became a year of a great withdrawal from Britain, it became a year of enormous advances in hard and soft power by the United States. So in terms of developing America's world role, both the Truman Doctrine and the Marshall Plan had a significant part to play. Anyway, thanks very much for listening. I'll finish there, and do catch us on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks. All the best. Bye-bye.